Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bown. I have a new website. It is simonbown.com. That's Bown, not Brown. It replaces the Past Lives Hypnosis website, and you can go to this new website to get past life regression, as well as info on my books and podcasts. This week, I'm talking to Michelle Brooks about her book, Proof Beyond the Grave: Real Accounts, Real Memories, Real Continuation. Hi, Michelle. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be here with you today.
So we're going to talk about your book. It's called Proof Beyond the Grave: Real Accounts, Real Memories, Real Continuation. So how did you put this book together? What was your process?
Well, I would have to go further back than just putting the book together, because the passion started when I was a kid. And it's just the continuing wanting to understand who we are, why are we here, and why are we going through what we go through. So what brought me to write this book started from the very beginning of my life story. And when I was a little girl, I was probably between the age 3 and 4. And I asked my mom, who is my husband and where is he? And she didn't have an answer for me. She just said, God knows. I grew up in a Christian family. And so anything about reincarnation was a huge no, don't look into it. It's not our belief system. So it was kind of brushed off. But the thing that really strikes me about this memory of asking the question is I wrote journals as a little girl and I'd miss him. And I'd even write, I miss you and I'm praying for you. And even now saying it, like, I get really choked up about it because it was such a real memory. And as I went through life, I had my belief system that I grew up in, and I would pray for him and ask that he was okay. You wouldn't believe how long I was actually doing that. By the time I was 40 years old, I was still praying for him. But on this one walk, because I'd met so many people that weren't him, and how I knew they weren't him, it's just they weren't fitting into something that felt like someone who loved me that I was looking for. And on this walk, I just fell to my knees because I had this overwhelming feeling that he had died. And I told him out loud, because I knew I might never, ever get a chance to say, I love you. I told him out loud, I love you. And see, even now I'm getting emotional. And I said, I'm so sorry I wasn't able to tell you I love you. And I miss you. And I kept walking and I let it go. And it's interesting that the minute I let it go, I really felt a release. And I did want to now understand why I held on to that for so long. And I became a reverend in the early 2000s because I really badly wanted to help fellow believers who were going through trauma and going through bad relationships and wanting to understand how it just keeps reoccurring. But because I became a reverend, just like you, Simon, I just felt like as we get deeper into a topic that we're passionate about, we want to know why we know what we know, right? So I just started to research my belief system, and I started finding out that there were things that had big discrepancies. And who wrote what books, and who compiled the Bible, and why was it compiled that way? So to go back to your question, pretty much sum it up real quick on that, is that out of the research I did, I started to compile information, and I wanted science. I wanted firsthand experiences with people who had memory, and I just believe that if I had put together the correct information for my own self, then I could therefore guide people along the way. So it did make me find a lot of people in this realm, such as Dr. Eden Stevenson and Dr. Jim Tucker, and their work that they did, and the fact that they didn't even start off as believers in it. They were psychiatrists working with children, and then they change over to a study on afterlife. And that just created me to write the book, but it really was a long time coming from when I was little.
And it's a book where you look for verified evidence. It's not just about telling the stories.
Exactly. And I think that's why it's so important, because if you're going to be a minister or you're going to be someone trying to help people along, it's good to have verifiable stories that they were proven. They're so unshakable. They have science behind them. They had deep encounters with the children, the things that they said. Then they had forensics behind them as well. And some of the children would remember, and usually a traumatic death seemed to be what they would encounter. And that's what the memory would pull from. And it would have them be able to go into the forensic of it and find whom they believed they were would have injuries in areas where birthmarks had shown up on the body of the child who had the memory. So, very interesting science behind it all that really pulled me into this. It has enough information to put some real science behind a belief system that reincarnation could be what we experience as we move to the next life.
So how would you define what reincarnation is? I know that's a big question. Do you think it's we have a soul, 100% of our soul is incarnated in each life, or is it something else to that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think we obviously won't know all that. And maybe as we go through life, it's always going to be a question we would have. But to me, science kind of keeps going back to things such as the double slit experiment, where science proves that matter doesn't exist as a solid object until it's looked at by consciousness. When it's left alone, it acts like a wave of just infinite potential, you know? So the moment that consciousness observes it, the wave instantly collapses into a solid physical particle, making something be. So if you say, where does the soul come from? Does it stay? Are we consciousness? It starts to pull me into a feeling of where. One. We're one divine consciousness. We're one divine observer, experiencing life in many different stories of life. And this is why we feel very connected to each other, why we can feel that someone needs a hug, why we can feel that we need to call someone. We are more connected, I think, than we even realize. And I think if we dig into the science deep enough, we can see that connection is real and it changes our quality of life. So I know your question was that, but it kind of brings me over to near-death experiences for people. People who have near-death experiences, they come back out of that experience a better person, it seems, even into their own selves. They talk about their compassion with others. They don't need the physical realm the way that they used to. They're not connected to things of the physical realm like they were. They're more compassionate, loving. So I feel like we are all part of the exact same consciousness, and we're all out there, hopefully, wanting to know the same, which is who are we? Why are we here? And what does that mean for us as a people?
Your book spends a lot of time talking about children with past life memories, and this is one of my favourite subjects. I've got Ian Stevenson's book on the shelf behind me with When Reincarnation and Biology Intersect.
Yes. Oh my goodness. He had amazing books on all this subject, didn't he? I mean, he had, I want to say, at least 5 books that were really amazing. And he wrote them more in the medical realm for his colleagues, not necessarily for just the regular reader. So they're not even done in story form. That I know why they fascinate you, because he's placed so much facts and evidence where he would make sure that they couldn't be disputed, because no one had told the child about the location. No one had interacted with the child about any subject that they talk about. And one of the little boys in the stories that I had written in my book was one that was really fascinating. And he was 2 years old when his first memory started to come up. And that's kind of what Dr. Ian Stevenson started recognizing, were that kids would only stay in the real deep memories from the age 2 to 5. And that's when really they hadn't started living, making friendships. Life with school hadn't started. Life here in this new body hadn't started creating its own stories. They were still able to pull deeply from the other stories. And as their mind started to be able to be formed enough to start to think through, whoa, who am I? You know, that little person would have a memory. And so this little boy's story, if you'd like me to tell you a little bit about it, was pretty amazing. And he was a little boy that started to scream at night, and he would say, "Little man can't get out," and he would be kicking his legs and pushing his arms up in the air, and he was scaring his family because they weren't sure why it was happening. And his name was James Madison. Well, his previous life, his name would have been James Madison, but his name was James Leninger. And he was born April 10th, 1998. His father was a devoted Christian. His mother was more open to the concept of life after death, but father definitely was not. So he didn't want to hear anything of it if that was a thought process. But the mom didn't know what it was about. But her mother came to her one day and said, "I think this could be a past life memory." Because as he got a little bit older, he started to say things about an airplane, about crashing. And so his dad did ask a few more questions, and his son went in a little bit deeper on a few things. And let me see, I have a few notes on it because I don't want to get any of his story wrong. Let's go over here too. He told his parents that it was a plane and it was shot down. He told them it caught on fire, and he told them that it was a Corsair, and that had been hit by Japanese. And he also mentioned a boat that the plane would land on. And the interesting thing was his father started to say, "Well, just really strange things. I need to look into this a little further. I really don't know what to think about it." So his father became really interested and researched a couple of things on what the son had said. And one afternoon, his mom showed him a toy plane, and she says, "What's this object?" It was right underneath the plane. And he said that it was a drop tank. And his mom was like, "How does he even know what a drop tank was?" She didn't know what a drop tank was. So the father was like, "How in the world?" And he described also the physical sensation of being in the cockpit, how it vibrated, what the smell of oil smelled like. I mean, at a young age, these are just very strange things. And, you know, it didn't seem like he was describing it with like an imagination. He was describing something he really sensed. And usually they can tell from these stories where the kid gets emotional about things. And on my website, I put down one of the videos of the little boy, so you can actually watch it. And he's amazing. You can see that he's passionate about airplanes. As he got older, he ended up getting a a G.I. Joe, and he named his G.I. Joe Billy. And they kind of didn't say anything about it, but when he named two other G.I. Joes, he named him Lennon and Walter, the dad started asking. And his son said they were men that he had met after he had died. And the names that he had mentioned were three different people that were on the USS Natoma Bay, which is the very ship he said that his plane flew off of. And so the father just decided he was going to look a little deeper, and he actually did find that three men with the exact same name had died and were killed. And they were not famous by any means. You'd have to really look into it to find out. And so the mom also and the father found that there was a man with the name James, because he always said that he was James, even in his previous life. And they found the exact guy with the last name that the kid mentioned. And the mom saw that there was a living relative still alive. And she reached out to the living relative, which would have been the sister of the guy who died. And what was interesting was the sister's name was Anne. And the little boy said, well, her name is Annie. So he knew her nickname. And he said, ask Annie for the picture that mom drew for her. Now, this older lady, very much older, said, I do have a picture my mother drew me. So they ended up meeting Anne, and he was really comfortable with her right away. And she does feel from the information about their father, if this is his life to remember, that her father was abusive and certain things about the dad that just only they would know. So the parents thought, you know, we want him to move along in his life and not just have all these memories, because they do have a lot of grief to them, because a lot of these kids who remember are remembering from something traumatic. And they went to the very area that the plane would have gone down. And you'll see, if you watch this video, how he gets highly emotional, little boy, and he says, I salute you. And he said goodbye to his previous self. Now, what I find really interesting is the exact same thing that happened to him happened to me, where it was a relief. It was a release. And it was almost like healing yourself from something in your past that you held on to as a memory. And if it's traumatic, and why you do your work with the hypnosis is that you're trying to get someone through something traumatic and resolve it and come into the you always were meant to be. And that kind of seems to be the situation with each one of these beautiful stories, is that these children, once they've addressed the memory, they let it go and they move on with their lives. The memory really for me is more of, this could be where we go as we turn our consciousness to a new body. This could be how our reality shifts every lifetime. So just the fact that these stories exist, it's unfortunate they come from trauma-based remembrance, but the amazing part about the children is that it's something they are proving could be real in science even.
So about 70% of the children who talk about past lives describe like an early death and violent deaths. Why do you think it is that so many of the children have those memories? There's something about dying like that that helps them remember it in the new life?
Yes, I mean, I think it can go back into science. So I'll just put out a couple of scientific ideas, because I feel like it's wonderful, you know, to talk on theory, but it would be great to have a little science backing it up as well. So I know maybe not all of you will understand, and I'm still working on understanding science anyway. I think science is constantly making us push our understanding, right? So quantum entanglement has been said to show that separate particles, they remain permanently connected between in time and space, across time and space. And if we take that and we move that into memories, something traumatic, something intensely emotional, and we also look at the double split experiment, science proves that, you know, that matter is empty until consciousness looks at it. What if your consciousness is so strong with something that just happened to you that you take that into that atom that is empty and you create it now into your consciousness here? So now I think that science can kind of show that what you had as a previous traumatic situation turns something that wasn't solid into something solid in your consciousness, and you remember, because I believe your brain receives the information and that consciousness is coming from somewhere else in your brain, such as near-death experiences prove that too, you know, that the brain will show that it's not no waves at all, and the person will be having an out-of-body. They will look over and they'll see themselves. They'll talk about what the doctor said, and they'll say what happened to their body at the time. And then when they come back into completely aware, brains working, bodies functioning again, the doctors will say, that's exactly what we talked about. That's exactly what we did when we were operating. So it was obvious that consciousness isn't just what the brain is holding on to. It's something outside of it. And I think science kind of can show us, if we dig into it enough, that it's real. Our consciousness is something separate than just our body and our brain. And maybe that's why trauma can move from person to person like that as you move through life. And I feel, on the same subject, again, going back to you, is that when we do hypnosis and regression therapy, we're healing parts of ourselves that we don't even realize we're carrying with us. You know, how many of us have unknown anxiety for what reason? We don't understand why it's there, but we have an anxiety of heights, water. Some people have phobias that are bad. Some people fall victim to the same reoccurring relationships that seem abusive, and we don't know why. But when you have hypnosis, regression therapy, things like that, it starts to address those pieces we may have pulled along with us that science could prove with quantum entanglement and this double slits experiment that's out there. So hopefully that answers your question to some extent, but I still think we're discovering all that.
And it sort of suggests to me, and tell me if I'm wrong, that if it is this quantum thing that you're talking about, bringing through these memories to the children, it's not like it's a spiritual thing and there's a soul making a decision that in the next life I'm going to remember something. It's just kind of an automatic thing that happens to have happened.
Yes, I really do believe so. And, you know, it's interesting that you speak on this, because as a reverend, I didn't even mention that in my book because I want to keep it open for everyone to read, because I don't really believe that, as I went through, like I told you, finding what it is I believe, why I believe, so I can help other people, I started realizing religion isn't it at all. If we go back to the ancient belief systems, including whom would call themselves Christian, we will see that they all agreed pretty much the same way about a unity, one light, a divine light, and that we're all connected and we're going through stories, learning, and it's God observing the world through many, many different scenarios through all of us, and that the kingdom of God is within us, and that to me is so beautiful. It's such a connection. It's, you know, do unto others as you wish them to do to you, because you are all one. You wouldn't harm yourself if you realize we are all one moving through life. And I think that's the beautiful thing about this whole subject. It kind of brings us back to our power and our unity. And it doesn't have to deal with religion at all. If anything, it's just who we are.
So I got more questions that are sort of on the details of children with past life memories.
Okay.
It seems that the children reincarnate close to where the previous life was, within, say, 20 miles. Is that seen in most of them?
I don't think so. Some of them are even further away from that, but I really don't have enough information to tell you exact distances. But I do know that there are some theories out there that we travel within groups of souls that stay together. So let's say your mother could end up being your father or your daughter or your brother. Your enemy could end up being your mom, your wife, and that it's basically, and this is the thought process, it's basically us challenging our own selves to become the best version of ourselves and face these challenges with them being something closer to us than just some far off enemy. They could be our child, you know? So at first, maybe they were someone within your community that you didn't like and you all didn't get along. And then the next life, you get a chance to raise them. It's such a fascinating topic. But with your question, I wouldn't know the answer per se. But I do know that if that's the case, it might be because we are staying within our soul groups and we are learning from those around us. But what are your thoughts on that?
I'm very curious. I remember something about Ian Stevenson's cases that there seemed to be children talking about lives that were in another town or village that wasn't very far away.
True.
And that the children could lead the investigators to the previous house.
Yes. Okay. So there is one story that I feel like you're pulling from that I can remember. And like you said, there's probably many like this one. But there's a little girl in India, and I'll sum up her story. But she's amazing because she was this little girl who remembered being a man. And she also told her mom that she knew her husband's name. She knew her wife's name. And she knew that they were incense makers, and she knew the names of the incense that they made. She described the house in great detail, and she was able to say where it was, and it was across the water, like you're saying. So what was interesting about the story was her father was a school teacher, and he ends up having another school teacher there that is actually from that location. And he tells them about his daughter's story and how she remembers a past life of being a man. And she even mentions the man's name. And the teacher says, well, I'm going to go back over there. I live over there. So I will do some investigating. And he kind of believed in it somewhat when he talked to, when the teacher friend talked to his brother about it. His brother did not believe, but said, I'll go with you and we can investigate this further. So they did find that there was like three families that sold incense, but there was only one family that sold it, those three that she mentioned, the incense that the family sold. And so without talking to the family, I believe it was Jim Tucker that went on this trip, but if I'm wrong, please forgive me. But they went to go see the family with the little girl without telling the family they were coming because they want to be organic, see how it went. Well, the little girl recognized her brother-in-law right away, and she hugged her sister, and they didn't want to believe it. This family did not want to believe it, but then she said, hey, what happened to the one incense that we were making? And they then realized she must know. And she had mentioned that She'd gotten run over by a bus when she was on the way to market selling the incense. And that's exactly what happened to their brother. And they realized this story is very, very close to what our brother went through here. So the other thing that was really interesting about her story is that she had birthmarks. And we're not talking regular birthmarks, kind of in the normal places. She had raised birthmarks, and they were around her stomach area in the very same area once the forensics was looked at that the man had injuries when the bus hit him. And it's so amazing because she kept her memory much longer than most. But I think it's also because she's from an area of the world that is allowing their children to remember, and they don't push it away and they don't ignore it. And so she was able to keep the memory going and talk about it a lot. And the really most beautiful thing about that story, and I do have that one on my website as well in video form where you can see her, is that she's still friends with them today. They hug each other, spend time together, and it's so beautiful. And it's one of my favorites. But I think, Simon, one of my most favorite, and I will not have the names for this one, but it is on my website as well, is a woman who remembered that she had children. And she had quite a few children. She told her mom when she was little that she was afraid that she had abandoned them and that they weren't going to be okay. And the mom was really concerned about this. And again, your distance thing, it wasn't somewhere far, far away, but it was definitely an area that the little girl did not know about. And I don't remember how they united per se, but at the end of the story, you get to see her with the family she said was hers and her son. And it's amazing because they were saying she didn't just talk like their mom, she resembled their mom. So I think when we went back to science, birthmarks are just the exact same thing. Is that whatever traumatic emotion you had right before death can pass into a physical form. But not just that, if you are holding on to that person so strongly, you can actually look a lot like them. And I know that Dr. Ian Stevenson didn't have a lot of that as proof because a lot of his cases were from the 1800s and early 1900s. Where they just didn't have a ton of photography for proof like that he even thought about. But now we're seeing more and more of that kids who believe that they had past life memories actually resemble a person or have birthmarks that resemble some trauma from the previous life. So, yeah, you're right. It's very, very fascinating how close these cases can be from each other.
Hello, Simon here. I conduct past life regression sessions over Zoom. Have you ever felt a pull toward a place, a person, or a pattern in your life that you just can't explain? Past life regression can be a deeply healing and insightful experience, helping you explore the stories, emotions, and connections that may be shaping who you are today. Whether you're seeking clarity, emotional release, or a deeper understanding of your soul's journey, a session can open the door to powerful personal insight. To find out more or to book a session, visit simonbound.com. Hello, Simon here. And also with birthmarks, Ian Stevenson was able to get hold of autopsy reports and things and match them up.
Yes. Okay. So yeah, he was able to find that when the child talked about the traumatic death and he was able to connect them with the family, he would actually go seek out the autopsy reports to really verify, because he wanted to make sure he knew what he knew before he even put it all down. But he was basically journaling all these things in more of a medical journal for his colleagues because he believed that they would embrace it. It had proof behind it. He wasn't creating any extra frill. He was really going off of the facts. And he wanted so badly for them to acknowledge this as something in science. And so he would find the forensics, and the one would be an entry wound area and an exit wound area. And he'd go, okay, that's interesting. And sure enough, the child would have a lifted birthmark of an area of the exact same location of an entry and exact location of an exit. Not just that, but let's say the little child had a birth defect, something with the hands or the arm. The injury could very well be happened on the fingers or happened on the arm. And it could have been due to the death, or it could have been right before death, something that did happen that still held on to consciousness possibly. But those connected him to understanding there's proof. There's proof something is different here about this just being a memory, the names lining up. No, even that lined up. But what I find really fascinating, Simon, is that as the kids would get older, and I think we can even testify to our own bodies, as children have gotten older, those birthmarks seem to fade away. Well, why would they fade away? Well, because you're becoming more of the you are taking on in this life than the you pulled with you from the previous life. So it's almost like addressing trauma. They are letting it go. And it's more of a physical view of letting go of trauma. We all may not always see the physical view of it, but what a beautiful testament to that possibility that when trauma is released, it really even leaves the body, the full body. And that's what's beautiful about, I think, what you're doing here with everyone who you talk to, why you do what you do. It's beautiful. It's really helping us all get through life and see the beauty in it, not just the life is hard and life is trauma.
Well, thanks a lot. Do you find that reincarnation is becoming more accepted in the West?
I actually do. And I think it's an awareness of self. I think we're waking up to the fact that we did not have all the answers. And what I find interesting, if I can go back to the Bible, is that the Western world was kind of given religion as one of our basic standing points of belief systems. And that belief system really sheltered us from looking any further. I was told at a very young age, I was not allowed to look into anything else. And that would go against Christianity and my belief system. And I think that's the biggest misconception. And that, if anything, it strengthens my belief system. But it has partial truths in it. So it really does get us a little bit lost. But as soon as people start realizing that not everything's true in it, I think we're waking up to, let's question things again. Let's double check what we're learning from people. Are we actually knowing what we know because we know it, or are we just taking someone's word for it? So I would tell anyone listening, you know, it's wonderful to listen to these podcasts and us, but research it, read, you go investigate, do hypnosis, stay open to many ideas because it's always changing understanding, and that's life. It's being part of the process, not just letting someone else tell you. It's actually investigating it. So I would say the Western world is starting to open their eyes to investigating, and that is opening them to more of an understanding of what you're investigating, what you're understanding. And it's probably why you're going to find so many more people wanting to know, and they're passionate about knowing. They're not just knowing, wanting to know because this is a mystical, oh, wow thing. It's because it really means something to them. They want to know why they're here and what the purpose of life is.
And I suppose cases that are coming up in the West where reincarnation's a lot less of a belief than India, like they're harder to dismiss because there's no previous influence over the child in the household regarding reincarnation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the kids are able to remember a lot more information. My mom had asked me possibly a couple more questions, not leading me in any direction, I might have been able to tell her more. But it is, you're right, when it comes to different cultures that believe in reincarnation or believe in the possibility of life after death like this, where you come into a new body, then they are more open to having their children continue to speak of it, and they don't just push it off. And my family very much wouldn't have let me look into this. And even now, and to anyone else looking into this that have friends and family that would either disown them or not agree with their belief system to the point where they wouldn't want to be around them, it is challenging for those that are strong in certain belief systems to even look into this or even have their children talk of such things without them being shunned by a whole world that they're a part of. And I think that's what I'm hoping I can bridge the gap and realize that we are all seeking truth, you know, and the truth sets us free. And that's what I really want. I want us all to be free to keep learning, and that it's wrong to just stick with one thing and hold it as truth. If you don't keep looking, then you're not going to keep learning. So
do you have advice for parents who have children that are saying things, because we don't want the parental questioning to have influence over the child's information, and we don't want accidental coaching them or leading? Mm-hmm. What advice would you give?
Well, I think first I would say don't panic. And you don't have to immediately assume anything either, because sometimes we get really excited and we would love that for our kid. But I would say, if they're making unusual statements, the kids are, I would encourage parents to write them down. And just the way that they're spoken, you don't need to lead the child, don't need to suggest any questions, or fill in the gaps. Just document it, record names and places, descriptions, relationships if they talk about it, anything unusual. And you're right, the reason is so important not to lead them on, because you know, if you're recording these things down and you've led them on, then you could completely go off track. But the the University of Virginia is still doing this work today. So they do have on their website a place, if you are one of those parents who believe your child is having a memory, they do have a place where you can go to and reach out to them. So I think that's phenomenal. But at the end of the day, that's why I wrote my books. I first wanted to give the knowledge of that this could even be real and could even be something that science could prove, that history spoke of and belief systems talked about. And then that would be, I wrote a book called You've Been Here Before. And that was all my studying for my own information. But after I did that, I was like, okay, well, I want to remember, and I want to get over anything that I feel isn't from anything that I can see. I can't understand it. I want to be able to get through hard stuff. And so I wrote the book, The Return. But I think it's the same with these parents. You know, if it's something very traumatic, you obviously want your child to not have to live with that trauma. And I think that seeking proper guidance would be wonderful for people like that, where they really could help their kids through it. But really, the goal is just to love on your kid and to not let it overwhelm the family, and to know that it is possibly a previous life memory and, you know, worthy of you acknowledging that.
I think this kind of thing may be all around us, because when my daughter was 3-4 years old, she was in the kitchen and she said to me, you know, I used to pick you up when you were this small. And I said to her, pardon, what was that? And she looked at me kind of bewildered, almost like, no, I didn't say anything. That's the only thing she ever said. But I wonder if this sort of thing is happening all around us all the time in families.
Yeah, I really do think so. And Simon, I think we're doing it too. I think as adults, we're doing it too. I think we don't realize we're doing it. So some of my experiences with people is a deja vu, you know, or it's a location they've never been to, but they feel like there's a door down that alley. And then sure enough, there's that door. I think we're doing it too. I think we just don't have the more solid memories to say, like your daughter did, I remember holding you when you were this small, you know, so we just don't have that connection piece, but we still have something connecting us. But one other part to what you're saying that really resonates with me on us being possibly from one divine consciousness, one divine source, is that everything that you do, Simon, everything that everyone's doing to better themselves could be going back into the consciousness realm to heal so many more people at the same time. And wouldn't that be beautiful that the things you do today that are so impactful, you're hoping just for your own life too, could be impacting way more people than you even realize. And one of the stories that kind of reminds me of what we're talking about is, I'm trying to remember his name. It's a little boy in my book as well. And his story is really fascinating because he does remember a location. It's a beach where airplanes land. He gets almost everything so right. His family goes over there. They're almost sure of it. He can walk through the house. He can describe his sisters and brothers outside playing with a dog. They end up finding the family that lived there. And there was a dog next door. But some of the memories were not fully this right, like the way the father died and things like that. But the little boy remembered his mom so much, he could cry about her and say he missed his mom. He wanted to go back home. And he told his mom today that she would love this woman, that she had short hair, and that the reason why she cut it was because it wasn't growing well anymore. So she cut it. So it was really, really an amazing story. But what pulls from the story for me is that some of the pieces weren't fully there. Does it mean he didn't live there? Does it mean that he actually wasn't a part of that story at all? It starts to make me feel like, what if we can pull from the collective consciousness and remember each other's or the collective things that we've gone through? And some of us are able to face some of the traumas as maybe even adults going through regression therapies of hard situations, sad memories, but we may be able to heal each other's traumas through a situation of remembrance. And maybe not all our memories are just solely from our reincarnations, or we're mixed, or that little boy could have mixed other reincarnations together. But to me, it kind of was curious. It made me think, I wonder if we can pull from each other those memories, and why you can get emotional when a friend tells you a story and you didn't live the story. It just, you get highly emotional and you want to cry about it, or a movie touches you and you didn't live that life, but you can feel it as if you did. So I don't know. It's just, isn't it the most beautiful thing to look into these things? I just love it so much.
So I wanted to talk to you about another case in the book. There was a lady called Uttara Hudar who woke believing that she was someone else from a Bengali village.
Yes, she is so fascinating. And her husband was a minister. And that's what kind of really drew me to that story, was that he was helping her through hypnosis. So he believed in being able to put someone under some hypnosis and help them get through certain pains. And she was dealing, I believe, with some back pain. But when she went under hypnosis, she was able to speak clearly a language that she wouldn't have been around at all or even known. And it was a German language she did not know. And she spoke it so clearly that he ended up having someone come and listen to her speak under hypnosis. And she was actually speaking in German. And so that to me was really fascinating, that we would be capable of even pulling from a language that we aren't exposed to at all and speak it clearly. So yes, that's a fascinating story, and it's one worth reading and diving deep into, because it does tell you that a lot more moves with us possibly through our reincarnation than just a memory. It's, we can pull languages.
Yeah, because I think she was speaking German from an isolated community of around like the year 1860, and was had its own little slang and things that you wouldn't learn even if you were taught German.
Exactly. Yeah, that was to me really fascinating how she was capable of doing that. And she even had a totally different name, I believe, that she went by in that when she was speaking. And I don't know, because there's so many cases of remembrance, and adults usually have these memories under hypnosis. So I don't know if it was her story or another one, but they had a situation where, and you can tell me, but when under hypnosis, they would remember a previous life. And when they come out, they would not remembering any of it. And I know it's probably not this story, but another lady, she would one day be a woman from a different time period and not know how to use anything in our time period at all. And then that woman would go away, and then she'd come back as her normal self one day and be completely fine for a few days. And it's interesting to me that when something sticks with us, possibly from a previous life, if that's what's explaining this, then it can come so clearly in that you aren't even aware that you're doing it. You're not aware whom you are. If when you come back to who you are today, you're not aware who you were when you were talking. And I find that really fascinating and worth me investigating even further. And I did throw those in because most of my stories are about children, because there's a lot more with children remembering. Adults are usually going under regression therapy, hypnosis, to pull any of that out.
I did cover a case once in the podcast of a 15-year-old girl in Poland who died and was resuscitated, but when she came back, she claimed to be somebody else. Mm. But at first of all, she was speaking a foreign language, and this was the 1920s in Poland, and nobody understood what she was saying. But eventually they worked out she was speaking Spanish, and she said her name was Maria, and she was a middle-aged woman in Madrid, and she had died. And she had details about how they lived in Madrid and how they heated the room. They would have a big pot full of hot coals that they would put in the room, and that would heat the room. And it seems some like bizarre little detail that she's absolutely correct. And how's a 15-year-old girl in Poland to know that?
Right. Oh my goodness, that is a fascinating story. Absolutely. Those details are what I found really interesting. And I didn't clearly speak on those when telling you the stories. But yeah, they have very vivid detail, like that little boy I was talking about who remembered planes landing on a beach at this house. When he walked through the house, he knew where rooms were. He knew where secret places were in the house. And when, you know, they walk into something like that, like the little girl in India we're talking about, she was able to walk right down the street, point at where things were, and talk about what her school looked like, and then point at it. It's fascinating. The details are so strong that it's really hard to look away from this not being a possibility. That's very, very strong for us to be able to believe.
So what about children that have preferences that don't fit with the culture they're born in? They talk about a past life. I remember there was one, he was a Hollywood agent, and the little boy was saying, because they lived in a small house, and his previous life, it was a big house. And he once said to his parents, "I can't believe you expect me to live in these conditions." No. There's this idea that there was somebody else I read about who said they were a pilot in the Second World War, an American pilot. Mm-hmm. They got shot down over Myanmar. Mm-hmm. And the boy in Myanmar now refuses to wear their clothes of that area and wants to eat with a knife and fork and has all these preferences from the previous life.
Wow.
Have you heard of these things?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so amazing. I feel like when we pull possibly from a previous life, we really are taking on everything about that life. And it's so fascinating when it comes to those things, how strong that can stick with us. I mean, I guess at the same sense of birthmark showcasing an entrance and exit wound or showcasing where you had been run over in a previous life, sticking with you that strong to be on your physical body is, you know, really nothing when it comes to you also holding on to likes, dislikes, and what you will and won't do and what you believe is appropriate lifestyle for yourself. It's just so fascinating. And I think that's something we all should probably look into for our own lives, you know, because we go through so much in our lives and we believe that we're just weak or we believe that we just have a phobia. And it may just be something pulling from a previous life. Like you said, I don't like food that's like that. I don't like this or that. That's strong. So it really makes you wonder what it is that you have brought into this life that came from the past life, if this is the way that our lives go from life to life to life.
It's been great talking to you. The book's called Proof Beyond the Grave, Real Accounts, Real Memories, Real Continuation. And people can get that on Amazon, can't they?
Yes, yes. And you can look into more of my information on REV, Michelle with two L's, Brooks.com. So it's RevMichelleBrooks.com. So it's REV, MichelleBrooks.com. And I will be posting even more things up there. I have a blog, I have the videos of these children's remembrances as well as adults. I have the understanding of, you know, our sovereignty and who we are, and hopefully it will help everyone realize that there's a lot more to life than just this one lifetime. And thank you so much, Simon, for having me here today.
Yeah, it's been great. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
This week, I was talking to Michelle Brooks about her book, Proof Beyond the Grave, Real Accounts, Real Memories, Real Continuation. And a great way to support the podcast is to join Patreon, where you'll get access to the extended episodes. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions, and you can sign up for a 7-day free trial. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife. And my book, Verified Near-Death Experiences, is on Amazon. You can get it on paperback, audiobook, or Kindle. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.